Fearless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager, and on the line with me today from Ventura, California, actually, I guess, Oxnard. Is that Oxnard out there?
Yes, it is.
Oxnard. Dorothy Doan. Normally, for those of you who listen to the Timeless Voyager on a regular basis, I stay almost 100% in the New Age, and I think that this is definitely a New Age topic, although on the surface it may come as quite a surprise. We're going to talk a little bit about animal activism today. And we're going to speak with Dorothy Doan, who is very active in this movement for animal rights. And the reason that we're going to do this on the Timeless Voyager is because if what we're talking about is unity and the worth of life and moving into a new age, then we must learn that animals certainly have rights and are part of the scheme of things. So welcome to the show, Dorothy.
Thank you.
And why don't we just start right out with how did you get involved in this work in the first place?
Well, like everyone else, I have a deep feeling for animals, but until I was contacted by the Humane Society, I never realized all the abuse that went on with animals. I have always had a spiritual feeling, but never before have I gotten this involved, in the sense that animals used and abused in so many ways. First, of course, there's animals used in research, and I always felt like everyone else does, that a lot of this experimentation is necessary, and that, of course, it's done humanely and so forth, but I found out this wasn't the case. There is a great lack of humanity in the treatment of animals. So I became interested in pursuing this further, and how could I help the animals? Well, I know that you can't always depend on the morality of people to do the right thing. So I felt that in certain cases where abuses could be corrected through legislation, and certain things have to be mandated.
Right. So now, what is the problem here? Is it that we have a less of a respect for life, for anything but human beings?
Yes, I really feel that's true. We're sort of in a power game, and we feel that we are the powerful beings and that we have the right to...
I mean, because... For example, just to go to the Ten Commandments, it does say thou shalt not kill. It doesn't say thou shalt not kill human beings and you can kill anything else. Right?
Yes, I feel that way.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying...
But, of course, traditionally animals have been killed for food.
All right.
And maybe in some cases this is necessary. However, in today's world, you know, we're finding out that meat consumption can be rather hazardous to the health. There's a book by John Robbins. You know, he was heir to the Robbins estate. And, of course, this was the ice cream people. In fact, they had a swimming pool in their backyard shaped like an ice cream cone. Well, as he got into this further, he realized that...
this is Robbins,
dairy products,
Robbins of Baskin and Robbins.
Baskin and Robbins,
right.
Yes. As he realized that dairy products were not healthful. And he put out a book that's extremely interesting and sympathetic to animals. And, of course, he was at odds with his family on this, but... The abuse of animals in meat production is terrible, so much so that the ingredients used, there are toxic chemicals used, antibiotics used to keep them alive under factory farming conditions,
mm-hmm.
is so hazardous to their health. And we, in turn, being on the food chain, we ingest this poisoned flesh, so that meat eating is now hazardous to our health. He has a lot of interesting facts in there. There's an excerpt from the book called Realities, in which he goes into things like how many acres of U.S. forests have been cleared to create land for animals to graze on, how this has depopulated whole rainforests and so forth. And it's a book, I recommend everybody to read if I want to pursue factory farming a little bit more.
Sure. What is the difference between animal rights, animal welfare, and animal activism?
Well, animal rights, again, is the philosophical idea that animals do have rights. Now, sometimes this can be overplayed, particularly by those who oppose us in their thinking that we are trying to give animals equal rights with people. Of course, this will never be. But an equal right, it might be in just equal treatment or equal consideration. For instance, a pig may need no more in consideration than to be put with other pigs where there's enough food and fresh air and where he's got a place to run freely. So anything less than this is a prejudice that Peter Singer, in his book, Animal Liberation, he calls it speciesism. We have had intolerance from year one, and of course, that's been extended to blacks, whites, males and females, human and non-human. The latest thing, of course, being human and non-human. We've come a long way, made great strides in our struggles against prejudice toward humans, but maybe now it's time to take a step further
now,
and overcome the tyranny of humans to non-humans.
Before we even talk about animal welfare, coming back to animal rights, now other societies do not run the way ours does, do they? As far as how they look at animals?
No, they range from worse to better. You find in England and some of those countries in Europe, they're way ahead of us in animal treatment. Their laws protect animals much more than ours do. And of course, in the more primitive countries, like in the Philippines and in China, animals are routinely eaten, dogs and cats, and they're kept in deplorable condition.
All right. Dorothy, we were talking about animal rights. Why don't we move over to animal welfare?
Well, animal welfare probably has more concern with pets and the overpopulation and the spay and neuter. We get involved in that too. And again, my primary focus being legislation, I track the different legislation that involves things like stopping pound seizure and puppy mills.
Now, what is, okay, two things.
Okay.
Pound seizure?
Well, you know, pound seizures is a terrible practice that vivisectors have of going to pounds and taking animals to be used in torturous experiments. And of course, people think, well, some of this experimentation is necessary, but if they knew what it was, they might think twice. And these pets are taken, you know, in all good faith, taken to the pound in all good faith, that if homes aren't found for them, they will be put to sleep humanely. So it would be the last thing in their mind that they would be taken to a laboratory and be tortured. So this is acting against the good faith of the people.
So in other words, what you're saying is that the general public is under the assumption that when an animal goes to the pound, that it's going to be humanely treated and then perhaps put to sleep.
Yes.
But that's not what occurs.
No, it isn't. However, there are pound seizure ordinances up and down the state in different counties. That's one way to do legislation.
Now, we're talking specifically about California right now.
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right.
That's one way to do legislation, is to do it, you know, through county or city ordinances. And another way, of course, is to take it to the state level.
Now, what would you
there.
Have, okay,
now,
what would you have done?
Pardon?
What would you have done then? What would you have
accomplished?
Yeah.
We would have stopped animals from going into research from the pounds.
Okay, so in other words, they're either going to be put to sleep?
They'd be put to sleep humanely. And, of course, this bill has been up in Sacramento for over 5 years, and for various reasons it has never gotten through, but it has gotten through in most counties.
Okay, now is this part of animal activism, or are we still on animal welfare?
Well, I guess I'm on both. Animal welfare, really, but activism to me is more getting out in the field and doing things
right.
Like demonstrating. Demonstrations at universities and at, you know, fur stores, and there's so many abuses along those lines. For instance, furs.
I think,
don't know if you realize how they're raised.
All right, why don't we, rather than move into furs, I have that here, why don't we just move back for a moment and talk a little bit about the legislation?
Okay.
You have a number of bills that you are responsible for moving. And why don't we just start out with some of these basic bills so people understand what's going on here. We've got the Dray's Ban Bill. Now, what is that one?
Yeah, that's actually the bill that I'm working on. About 3 years ago, Beverly McGrath and I, Beverly is of Oxnard too, had both decided that legislation was where it was at and we wanted to do it. So we got together and we researched for about 8 or 9 months. and decided that it was time to stop this Dreyse test. Now, this is the Dreyse is the rabbit eye and skin irritancy test that's done to test cosmetics and household products. And
now, you know, why do they do this? Let's get this together once and for
yeah.
all.
Yeah, why do they do it? It's really for liability purposes. The tests that they've done are only to show what it takes to blind a rabbit. It has no extrapolation to humans, and so they're not really safety tests. They're just done to protect
them in court.
If they should be sued, mm-hmm. they can say, well, the FDA accepts animal tests, and so we've done them, and now, you know, we're not liable.
Now, is there an alternative to this test?
There are many alternatives, and we researched that for months, too. There's about 30. There's a battery of tests. And what's interesting, I think the technology of the future is moving in the direction of cloning. There are companies such as Organogenesis in Massachusetts, which is able to clone organs now. It's kind of exciting. And, of course, they're able to clone the human skin, which is a three-layered organ, mm-hmm. and they can also clone skin cells.
So what you're saying,
all right,
you're implying then that they can get skin if they need it to test with.
Pardon?
I said I think you're implying then that they can get skin then if they need it.
Skin is real easy to get. I mean, you and I could slough off some skin cells.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, humans clone skin, and once they
so are rabbits are rabbits cheaper?
Actually, no, it's more expensive. If they got into the alternative processes, it would cost a fraction of the time and a fraction of the cost.
Now, this is called Dreyse.
The Dreyse is named for John Dreyse, who invented this test way back in the 40s. And the Federal Drug Administration, Food and Drug, which is a federal agency, there's also a state agency, they've always sort of passively accepted the Dreyse test because it was there. Now, they have no authority to require animal tests or any tests at all. They just set guidelines. But they've always accepted it, and it's going to take, you know, the wheels grind slowly, and it's going to take time for them to accept alternatives. They're beginning to, because through the efforts, and this is activism, of the animal rights people, we boycott products, such as Procter & Gamble products, because they do so much testing on animals.
All right.
So, in the process of that, animal testing has cut down a bit, but we can't depend on them to cut down, because at any time they could go back to it if they wanted to, or to switch to alternatives.
Sure.
And so we felt it had to be mandated. It has to be law.
Now, for those of you who may have just tuned in, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager, and I have with me on the show today Dorothy Doan. She is an animal rights and animal activist, and we are talking about the Dreyse ban bill, which is to ban this particular testing, which is, I guess, killing rabbits in a very inhumane way.
I'll describe it if you'd like.
Maybe you could describe it in a
in a less inhumane way. I don't know if there's
just describe it, and we'll decide later.
But say. They'll take, say, six rabbits and immobilize them in stocks, and then they clip their eyes open, and then they drop anything from permanent wave solution to mascara into their eyes. And, of course, the eyes, they can't blink. Their tearing system is different. Their corneal system is different. Everything is different about the rabbit eye, but they use them because, of course, they're cheap and docile. And so after they observe this for a period of 3 days, meanwhile the eyes are ulcerating and, you know.
Now the animals are blind at this point.
Then they get some sort of a reading, and it's all based on the, you know, subjective observation of whatever technician happens to be there. They get some kind of a reading, and they make a mathematical formula out of that. And then they try to take that and extrapolate it to humans. Of course, this isn't really possible, but they do come up with some kind of a figure. And the fact that they do these tests protects them in court. Now, of course, in modern day technology provides a much better way. And when you can use human cloned skin cells and eye cells, it obviously is more applicable to humans than rabbit skin and eyes. But it takes a long time to get them to change, and so we feel it has to be mandated.
All right. So this is
we took this through. Through the state, it's been very exciting because I've learned a lot as far as the procedure goes. And we were lucky to get our local assemblyman, Jack O'Connell, to introduce the bill. And we took it up to Sacramento 3 years ago. The first year, it didn't get very far because we hadn't ironed out all of the difficulties. We found that, you know, with 120 legislators up there, you'd have to try to please each one, and each one has different input. Anyway, we got the bill refined and defined and got it through the second year. It was very exciting. In the process, we put on press conferences and reception. We did a reception for the senators and assemblymen up there. We had celebrities out. I had Bob Barker out here to Oxnard to do a press conference with Assemblyman O'Connell. So it's been an exciting experience, and always keeping in mind, you know, these rabbits in the stocks, because you can get so caught up in the rest of it that you find yourself almost giving too many concessions away in the bill, because everybody wants to change it and you can't please everyone. Mm-hmm. So we got it through last year with a very good vote on both sides, both the Assembly and the Senate. And then when it came to Governor Dismasian's desk, he vetoed it. He vetoed it without giving us one opportunity to speak to him. We had celebrities. We had Jimmy Stewart waiting in line to talk to Governor Dismasian, and he absolutely refused to discuss this.
Now, do you know any reason why?
We found out this year. You see, we lobby everyone personally.
Now, that for our listeners means what?
We go to the Assemblymen and the Senate, and we have a pretty good team. We have doctors, a doctor or a nurse with us, and maybe an animal person, and Beverly and I, or one of us, as co-sponsors of the bill, and we tell them the facts. And, of course, the whole thing is based on scientific fact. This is not an animal rights issue. It's a human safety issue.
Okay. So you have a lot of factual basis.
A lot of factual basis, yeah.
And so, you should, you pretty much...
In the process of doing this, one assemblyman, his name is Jim Brulte, he's new this year, he sat with us for 2 hours and told us why the governor vetoed it. And it was because of the vote. Now, we got it through the Assembly 51 to 21, but of those 21 no votes, 19 were Republican, conservative.
So what you had was...
He saw the Republicans didn't vote for it, he vetoed it.
Now, so basically year, we had party line voting here.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what it was, party line voting. And this year we heavily targeted the Republican conservatives, and we just got it through the Assembly two weeks ago. And was so gratified. The best part of it all was that although the vote was great, 52 to 17, we were able to split. We broke that party line.
Uh-huh.
It's now 13 Republicans voted for it and 12 against. So this is going to look really good for the governor. We're hoping, we know so far that Pete Wilson is much more open to environmental issues. We're able to get appointments with his office. So we're very hopeful when we get it through the Senate that this time it will be passed into law. It's been, you know, a tremendous outpouring of energy, and then we get the constituencies involved.
All right.
They write letters, and they make phone calls, too. And as I say, we put on demonstrations. There's the Procter & Gamble plant here in Oxnard. This will be our fourth demonstration coming up in 2 weeks.
So that's the Dray's bill, pretty much.
Yes, uh-huh. And it's where we're at right now, is waiting for a Senate committee to be formed to review it, and then it will go to the Senate floor.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the different categories of animal work that you've been involved in. Now, you've got factory farming. Let's find out why you think this is cruel and unhealthful.
Well, you know, the good old days of the farmers are gone. Now, they say it's too expensive to raise animals that way. Animals now are routinely raised in tiny little cages. I don't know if you are aware of the veal crate. This is probably the most cruel of all.
Well, let's hear about it.
A little calf, male calf, of course, is immediately taken away from its mother and put into this little crate, and it can't.
Why don't you describe the size of it?
I think it's about 24 by 30, something like that. It can't turn around. It never takes a step in its life. It can't lay down. It can't move around comfortably.
Now, how long does it live in this?
Well, the life of a veal calf is 16 weeks anyway. That's when they are traditionally slaughtered for food.
So how long would you say that it lives in this particular environment?
So 16 weeks.
16 weeks?
It's force-fed, or not force-fed, but it's forced to eat only thin gruel because people think they want the white veal. Now, this keeps it anemic so that the flesh is white. It is loaded with antibiotics, with mold inhibitors, fungicides, everything you can think of to keep it alive during because of the terrible condition it's in. And quite often at the end of the time when they release the animal, it can't even take a step. It'll fall dead of a heart attack. It's so weak. It's never been allowed to develop its muscles. Its stomach has never been allowed to digest food. So there's a bill up now, it's been up for a couple of years, to abolish the veal crate. And again, you know, when you're dealing with all these legislators and powerful lobbies, agricultural lobbies and so forth, they keep cutting the bill and cutting it. It's down now to where they want to give the little calf 6 inches more of room.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like much, but the farmers are complaining, oh, well, if they have to give them 6 more inches, they'll have to restructure their barns and it'll cost them too much and so mm-hmm. forth. So I guess something is better than nothing.
So now do you attribute this to the beef lobby? I mean, is this what this is about?
The agricultural lobby, sure. Chickens are crammed 7 to a cage in the size of a folded newspaper, and their beaks are cut off. They're kept on the slanted wire, and of course any that fall down are pecked. This is how they're raised, and they're given the same kind of food. I mean, half of the antibiotics produced in the country go into animal food, and we ingest that.
Mm-hmm.
So their life is pretty sad, and from the beginning, you know, a little baby chick emerges from the shell eager for life, and what happens if it's a male chick? He's immediately dropped into a big plastic bag to suffocate along with all the other little chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's no feeling at all. And even in animal experimentation, you'll find that 90% of them are done without anesthesia.
Continue.
The other reason people are becoming so active is not only that they feel sorry for the animals, but as you can see, our health is being threatened.
Well, of course, from the way you're describing it,
yeah.
This is making meat more unhealthful than it would be just as being meat itself, just to be a vegetarian for the purpose of anything other than to be healthy at this point.
Yes.
you wouldn't want to have meat just because of the way it's being prepared.
Yeah, it is. And of course, it's full of hormones and, you know, pesticides. I guess I mentioned the molds. And mold inhibitors, fungicides. And we ingest it.
Okay,
and
so that's...
And we're also, you know, ingesting, okay. Partaking of that food. Also, we're partaking in the misery of their lives.
So in other words, you're supporting it.
Feeling.
All right, you're supporting it. In other words, if you're going out and buying,
yeah.
10 pounds of meats poultry a week, you are saying, yes, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and as an aside, in the reality section of John Robbins' book, he goes into, how much grain that goes into meat feeding. If we had that grain, we could feed the world 4 times over.
Hmm.
And, you know, the land that's used in grazing cattle, it's destroying our rainforests. And so it has a far-reaching effect.
Okay,
it's
now
affecting
for
our whole environment.
So for factory farming, there's a bill that you're that you've presented.
Well, the veal crate.
Okay, the
yes.
veal crate bill.
Uh huh. That would just stop that one thing.
All right. Protecting sea animals, especially dolphin and tuna, etc.
Yeah, I'm not into that as much, but you know, dolphins are so intelligent. There was a tale about a dolphin called Pelorus Jack, who guided ships through the New Zealand Channel for years and years and years. I mean, animals have done amazing things, and there was a sea turtle that had helped a woman who had fallen off a ship, and he floated her around in the water for days till a ship came and rescued her. It's amazing, even a sea animal, how much intelligence they have, and we're not doing them justice. Of course, with the dolphins, they tend to follow the tuna herds, and they get caught in the nets. And we're trying to protect them by banning these terrible nets that are, you know, miles and miles long. And Japan refuses to stop using them.
Now, you've had cooperation.
We've been boycotting Daphne's yeah. tuna.
Now, you have had cooperation from some of the American tuna companies.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Or should we say the tuna companies?
I'm trying to think of the names of them. There are, but anyway, the labels on these products, always look at the labels, and there is a label on the tuna product that says dolphin-free, dolphin-safe.
Okay. All right.
And
it is possible.
I think it's Starkist, and there are maybe 2 or 3 that are not buying tuna from Japan and not catching tuna in a way that would endanger the dolphins.
Now, it is possible, and that's what we're saying. it's possible to catch tuna without having to catch dolphins.
Surely.
All right.
Yeah, they have to change their net system. They want to put out these huge, huge nets so they can do it very easily and, you know, catch everything. And the fish that are thrown away in the process, it's really...
Now, you've got a few other possibilities here. You've got the hunting, which is the Mountain Lion Initiative.
That's already gone through. That was an example, because, you know, I'm into legislation. That was a wonderful example of what the people can do. They couldn't get the bill through the state. Then you try a ballot initiative. And to do a ballot initiative, you have to get 450,000 signatures. And that was a concerted effort of all animal people up and down the state to get those signatures. And it has to be done in a limited time. And when that's done, then it's put on the ballot, and the people get to vote on it themselves rather than, the legislators deciding. So that was a great triumph. That Mountain Lion Initiative went through last year.
Dorothy, we were talking a moment ago. I said, how about the frog dissection that was stopped?
Yes, this is another big area that we work in is education. Education has to start with the children, and if they don't have a proper respect and reverence for life, you know, what kind of adults are they going to turn out to be? And frog dissection and worm dissection, things like that, are routinely done at high school level. Some children just scream and have nightmares if they have to do it. They shouldn't be forced to do this. Jennifer Graham, a little girl, took a stand on this and refused to do the frog dissection. And, of course, she was threatened with failing the class and so forth. They made quite a thing out of it. But she took it to court, and she won. And she no longer has to do frog dissection. It has gone through now as an ordinance at in the city of Los Angeles that dissection no longer has to be done, that the pupil has the right to refusal. Now, this is at the high school level, and we'd like to see that, of course, go through everywhere, because why is it necessary for children to cut up animals? You know, what kind of an example is that setting for them?
Right.
And of course, later on, those who do this and whose feelings become blunted through this turn into vivisectors. Let's say they're then able to go on and do the worst kind of research that's
okay.
done in laboratories.
Let's move over to the demonstrations you've done, especially Procter & Gamble and UCLA.
Yes. Well, Procter & Gamble, because it ties in with the bill. I've been involved and led the first one and been involved in the next two, and we're going to do another one in 2 weeks. That's for Animal Lab Liberation Week. Once a year, there's a week in which everyone around the country gets together and does things for the animals. Primarily, a lot of it is demonstrations. And so... Procter & Gamble will be part of that lab week. What we do is we go out and we have our signs and we put down the facts and figures, how many millions of animals Procter & Gamble kills in the process of testing their products. And we ask for boycotts, too. And, of course, this has helped cut down on the animal use. They are trying to cut down because we are boycotting their products. But a demonstration is usually a simple thing. We inform the police. It's always, it's not what you call civil disobedience. It's just a very peaceful protest, and we march up and down. We have the press out. There's always a representative comes out from the Procter & Gamble factory to talk to us. We also collect all Procter & Gamble products, all that we can. One time we had a truckload of products and just dumped them there. It's a product return. And
now, just about everything that they make is are you saying that, I should not say that that's what it is just about everything that they made tested using animals?
Well, the factory here is a paper product factory, no. But all of their soaps, detergents are all tested on animals.
Okay.
And bleaches, all tested on animals. And they do the Dray's test.
Right,
in other words, then there's another test.
So they
called.
Pour bleach in the eyes of a
yeah.
rabbit to see what?
Yes, they do.
What
and
is
they,
the purpose
they
of
also,
that? Don't they already know what it's going to do after all these years?
Sure they know. It's only to protect them in court. They can say, well, we did the animal test. And there's over 200,000 cases of accidental poisoning reported. You know, animal testing has never kept one product off the market. They know Drano is going to, you know, cause your eyes to bleach out, but it goes on the market anyway. All they ever have to do is put a warning label on it. So animal tests are in no way protecting children, because that's their argument. We have to protect children, but the only way to protect a child is for a watchful parent to keep an eye on her so she doesn't get under the sink and, and get into Drano and Oven Cleaner and all those other products, all of which have been tested on animals and still go on the market.
Let's move to furs.
Okay. Furs are, well, there's two ways. They're either trapped in the wild or they're raised on so-called, quote, ranches. The ranches, again, consist of tiny little cages.
So that's like factory farming again.
Just like factory farming. And these are wild animals, and they go insane in those little cages. And, of course, they're wild. They don't even put the food in the cages. They put it on top of the cages, and the animals have to claw for it. And then the way they're killed is very, very inhumane. They're killed in a way, they're killed consciously in a way that will not damage their furs. One way is anal electrocution. Now, the ones in the wild, that's even worse, because the steel jaw leg hole trap, which is a very, very cruel device, and there are many counties that have put a ban on it. That's another bill we'd like to get through to stop the steel jaw leg hole trap, because
once. Why don't you describe that trap?
It's just a terrible, you know, large trap with teeth, and once the animal's foot or whatever is imprisoned in it, they can't get out. And those trappers may not come around for days, and that animal is suffering.
And so it just starves to death or bleeds to death?
It starves to death, and some animals chew off their feet to escape. And, of course, these traps capture cats and dogs and, you know, whatever else is around. And then when the hunter comes to the trap, of course, you know, again, he very inhumanely kills the animal. And it takes 40 animals to provide a fur coat. And, you know, Are we willing? I personally would even dream of having a coat at the cost of such agony. I mean, just it's all for vanity. Fake furs are available, which are wonderful. They're just as warm. They're just as beautiful.
All right,
and
now that's
at no
okay.
know, cost and
so
in
furs. Life. Furs. Once again, I mean, we're looking at the fact that human beings are supporting all of this. What about animals and entertainment? Now, this has always been something that we hear about, but we always hear excuses.
Yeah, because we enjoy it. You know, I did too until I started getting some influx of consciousness. I think we all have to become more conscious and more sensitive to life.
Now, you even put down here horse racing, circuses, and zoos.
Uh-huh.
And these, you're saying, are relatively inhumane, meaning...
Well, zoos are the least. Zoos used to be, you know, they used to keep animals in tiny cages in zoos too. Now they're trying to provide a more natural environment for them. So they're the least of the problem, but in fact, sometimes they can do some good by keeping endangered species there that would die out if they weren't bred in captivity. The new zoos that are going into, you know, providing a natural environment where the animals aren't pacing a cage and going insane, where they can live a normal life and even breed, they're okay. Circuses are very cruel when you think of it. Those animals are beaten in whatever ways they're trained. And the short time they have in the ring, the rest of the time, they're in tiny cages. And, you know, being driven from town to town and not properly exercised or fed. Horse racing, too. Of course, we all know how that's done. And horses are doped and forced to run. And you know, it's again, we're taking animals out of their natural element and making them perform for
our... This is a type of exploitation. I mean, we're back to exploitation.
Exploitation again, uh-huh.
That's so we're either killing them or exploiting them. Whatever we're doing, we're using them. And I guess now you can come into any type of dog racing and
dog racing, that's right.
Cock
oh,
fighting.
Dog racing. I forgot about that. Yeah. Greyhound racing is terrible because they use live rabbits to train them.
Okay.
They, you know, they'll drag a live rabbit around the track. My feeling is that the whole concept of medical research on animals is wrong. So some people will say, well... Some experiments help people, but the concept doesn't work. Animal results do not extrapolate to people. Now, I went into it thinking, oh, well, some of this must do some good, and I was horrified. I've spent years in researching it. I can't come up with one experiment that's helped humanity, although, the doctors will say otherwise. And so much of it, too, is, I'd say 95% of it, is what they call basic research. That's done just to satisfy the scientist's curiosity.
So, I mean, is this like nonsense research?
It's nonsense research. I'd hate to tell you what some of it is, but I will if you want to hear. But the university system is the recipient of about $13.5
billion
a year.
Billion with a B.
With a B, funded from Congress, and it goes all around the country, and one of the things that the technicians learn as soon as they get in there is how to write up grants, because they want to get this grant money. And some of these experimentations are performed for up to 20 years, just over and over and over again, to get that grant money. And the university itself gets 45% of the money, so of course they will approve of anything that's done.
So the university, in a sense, is keeping itself running by supporting this inhumane treatment of animals.
Yes, and you know, the research itself is frivolous. I'm trying to think of something that's not too gruesome. I can't really, but I mean they'll cut burn. Say they want to test shock. They'll think of different ways. Well, let's shock them to death. Let's burn them to death. Let's see, you know, how that.
And of course, this is a new group of students each time who haven't seen it like the old group of students.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is purposeless testing.
It is purposeless. They'll do things like let's take the cat research at UCLA, and they will put electrodes in the cat's heads, and then they'll probe it and test them, and they'll spinalize them. They'll put them on a treadmill and see how fast they can go if they've been spinalized. And the results of this work will be something like kittens that are spinalized at 6 weeks can walk a treadmill better than a cat at 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example.
Well,
that particular research has gone on for 20 years.
All right. Well,
now what, you know, there's no possible usable results to humans on that.
Dorothy, how can people who are listening in different parts of the country help?
Get angry.
Okay.
Get angry, and probably the best way is to contact some of the animal groups.
Dorothy, I want to thank you very much for coming on the Timeless Voyager program.
Oh, thank you.
I think this has been very, very informative for those people who have been listening. It helps help them learn about an issue that is kept pretty quiet, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think we're coming more out in the open, though. And the outrage is growing, and the numbers are growing. So I just hope everybody will get in there and try to help their younger brothers, the animals. We're all part of this earth, and we're all interrelated.
We depend
on each other to keep the balance of the ecology.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Okay.
And I want to thank all of you for listening to The Timeless Voyager. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one. Thank you.